My guest tonight is Dr. Claire Bailey. She's a consultant ophthalmologist based primarily at the Bristol Eye Hospital, where she has been the clinical director of research and treatment since 2012. She specialises, you'll be pleased to know, in disorders of the macula, which is why we've invited her today, particularly age-related macular degeneration and other conditions such as diabetic macular edema. She is a clinician, but she's also a researcher, and she has been involved in very many international clinical trials. Tonight, we've asked Claire to talk specifically about dry AMD. Now, most people probably with AMD have the dry form, and of course are waiting for news of the first effective treatment for this condition. And of course, we're all interested to learn more about the condition in general and how best with it can manage it. So my grateful thanks to Claire Bailey for joining us this evening. So Claire, over to you, and thank you very much indeed.
Many thanks, Cathy, for that generous introduction. It's a great pleasure to be here today and to give you a talk about dry macular degeneration. So I'm going to cover some of the features that one might have with dry macular degeneration. I'm going to cover the current management options, and I'm also going to talk, perhaps most excitingly, about the current clinical research in this field. So macular degeneration is a multifactorial disease influenced by both environmental factors, but increasingly we're realising that there are genetic factors playing a part as well. Now, dry AMD that I'm going to specifically talk about today involves the slow degeneration of cells. In terms of genetics, it's now known that there are several genes, including those involving the complement pathways, that have been associated with an increased risk of AMD. And these suggest a role for inflammation and the alternative complement pathway, which was essentially an inflammatory pathway in the body, in the development of macular degeneration. And that was incredibly important work, the genetic studies, because that's paved the way for quite a number of therapeutic avenues that are currently under research. If we look at the various stages of AMD, in the early stages, there may be some drusen, and I'll describe these in a bit more detail, which are the earliest features, or some pigment clumping, some pigment changes in the macular area. And it's now known that inflammatory processes play a role even in the early stages of disease. And these would be picked up usually by your own optician, but it might involve coming into hospital and then having your retinas looked at, and might be spotted at that point as well. And in the later stages of macular degeneration, these are really divided into the choroidal neovascularization, that's the wet type of macular degeneration, or the geographic atrophy, which is the more advanced forms of dry macular degeneration. Now, it's really important to realise that a lot of people have very early dry macular degeneration, and because it generally slowly progresses, or very slowly progresses, there are many people who never develop significant visual problems as a result of their dry macular degeneration. But the more advanced forms are where people are getting lots of wear and tear, or what we call geographic atrophy. Now, drusen are, there's quite a lot of increased interest in drusen and the subtypes of drusen at present. Now, drusen are focal deposits of sort of debris material, wear and tear material, and their largest single component is lipid. But it's now known that there are various types of drusen that may have different significances. Now, the typical drusen is located underneath the layer, which we call a retinal pigment epithelium. But more recently, there's a different type of drusen that have been described called reticular pseudodrusen, and they're located on top of the retinal pigment epithelium. And they're very relevant to this particular talk because they may be particularly associated with the development of atrophic changes, i.e. geographic atrophy. So there are quite a lot of clinical studies that are particularly looking to recruit people who have this subtype of drusen called reticular pseudodrusen. One of the tests we use a lot now in the field of dry macular degeneration is something called fundus autofluorescence. And this is a really clever test because it's like a sort of real-time in vivo assessment of how happy the retinal pigment epithelium is. So if a retinal pigment epithelium is unhappy but still surviving, it will usually show up as a bit bright. So we call that hyperautofluorescence, looks like these little sort of white speckledy areas around there. But if the retinal pigment epithelium has died away, then it doesn't autofluoresce at all and then looks black on the scans, as in this area in the centre. And this test is a really, really good test for looking at, involved in clinical studies, looking at whether we can alter the rate of progression of geographic atrophy. And I'll come back to that later. But many, many people will be having this test done when they come to routine appointments. And it doesn't really involve anything too unpleasant. It's just a bit like having a photograph done. It's just a brightish sort of flash that happens as you have your normal imaging done. So we move now on to the management of dry macular degeneration. Well, we're very interested in risk reduction. Obviously, if people do develop choroidal neovascularization, the wet type, then there's a whole panoply of choices of treatments we can give. And that's not the subject for this talk today. But I think it's worth mentioning, and it's often confused by people, that people who have dry AMD may go on to develop wet. So if anybody has dry, they should always seek attention if any new symptoms develop, especially distortion of vision. And a lot of people get confused thinking, well, it's either dry or wet. But in fact, most people with wet have got underlying dry as well. And it's the dry that may lead on to the development of wet subsequently. And of course, in terms of the management of AMD, the support for people with visual loss, low visual aids, etc., that the Stirling work, the Macular Society does, and all these clever electronic aids that are now getting more and more accessible for people are incredibly important as well. In terms of risk reduction, the single most important thing that could possibly be done is to not smoke and ideally never start smoking in the first place. It really has a very significantly increased risk. There's a fourfold increased risk overall, but if people have a particular genetic susceptibility as well, that risk may be massively higher than that. So trying to reduce and stop smoking is the most important thing. We generally say for people who have AMD that it's a good idea to reduce exposure to UV and blue light because of the theoretical possibility of that causing what we call oxidative damage in the retina. And then I'll talk in a bit more detail now about dietary factors and the potential role of nutritional supplementation. So in terms of diet, the background really is that we all have macular pigment, which is sort of protective, really, but that does decline with age. Now, you can vary your macular pigment levels by doing different things with your diet. And so the theory is by modifying your diet, you can increase your macular pigment and then potentially protect your eyes against what we call oxidative damage. And certain nutrients can help to protect the body, and they're particularly vitamins A, C and E. And then these important compounds called lutein and zeaxanthine, which are found in high concentrations of the macula. So diet is definitely important. Now, if you wanted to say, well, what are the best things in the diet? Well, there's lots of lutein, which is very good for helping macular pigment in ordinary things you can have in ordinary diet. So kale is top of the list with a really high dose per 100 grams of the food. And then others, red peppers, spinach, lettuce, leeks, broccoli, peas are all good as well. And then yellow things, so eggs and orange and yellow fruits and veg also contain lutein and zeaxanthine as well. And so they're very good to incorporate in the diet. So dietary measures, really important. People ask a lot about whether they should take supplements. So I just wanted to really summarize it fairly briefly for you. Now, there were two big, huge, actually, randomized controls trials done on this topic from America called the AREDS studies. AREDS 1 looked at a particular supplement, which involved vitamin C, beta-carotene, vitamin E and zinc. And what they found in the study, that people had very mild AMD, had an incredibly low rate of developing advanced macular degeneration at the 10-year follow-up. But they found that in people who had at least what we call intermediate AMD, so that's kind of large drusen or lots and lots of drusen changes, then they found that it did result in a reduction in the risk of progression to advanced macular degeneration. And what the AREDS2 results showed, that it was perfectly reasonable, and you had similar results, if not slightly better potentially, if you took lutein and zeaxanthin and you replaced that, took the beta carotene out, so that was good. And they showed also that reducing the zinc dose did not reduce the efficacy of the tablet, so that was good. But they found that there was no additional benefit from adding in omega-3 supplements. That doesn't mean that they're not a good thing generally for health, or they're a good thing to have in your diet, but it didn't show the evidence from this big randomized control trial that adding in those supplements was necessary. There's no direct evidence at all that people with early AMD should take lutein and multivitamin supplementation, but that the dietary measures are important for all of us, but particularly if people are developing some early macular degeneration. But the people that might consider supplementation with a preparation based on the AREDS2 data are people who have extensive intermediate-sized or large drusen, some geographic atrophy in one eye, or advanced AMD in either eye. So what is the evidence-based formulation that we would generally say it needs to contain? So it would be vitamin C, 500 milligrams, vitamin E, 400 international units, copper, 2 milligrams, lutein, 10 milligrams, zeaxanthin, 2 milligrams, and zinc, 25 milligrams. And there's a lot of different preparations on the market, a bewildering array, and it's worth just checking that they do contain those types of doses, because there's quite a range of things there. So moving then on to the dry AMD trials, the tricky thing when you're running dry AMD trials is that the changes are very slowly progressive, and nobody really wants a clinical trial that takes 20 years, because you're just not going to get the results quick enough. And if you're just looking at visual acuity, you may not show the results in a quick enough manner. So what most of the trials now are using what's called the fundus autofluorescence to assess progression. And by showing a reduction in progression, that would hopefully then ultimately reflect in a better stability of vision in the future. And it's a really active area of clinical research. So I do, you know, feel quite optimistic that we have got quite a lot of things in the pipeline that could offer hope for the future. Sometimes people with macular degeneration feel that things have got worse quite rapidly, which makes people think they've got the wet type. But in fact, sometimes it's the dry type that's just pipped off that last important bit of vision that people were using for their preferential fixation location. So I thought I would just run through some of the potentially exciting options, to give you a taste. Clearly, none of you need to know the exact details of all of these, but I hope it will give you a taster that there really is quite a lot of things happening out there. So really hot off the press, because this was only published on the 31st of August, so basically a week ago, is a pivotal phase 2-3 trial, a big size study with 286 participants. It was prospective, double masked and randomized, and that's the buzzwords for how to do a trial really well. And it was called GATHER1, and it was looking at inhibiting a thing called complement C5. So that's in this inflammatory pathway I mentioned earlier. The study involved monthly intravitreal injections with the drug versus a sham injection or a placebo, a pretend injection. They found it was well tolerated, so it seemed to be very safe. And really importantly, and this is a well-conducted study, it seemed to show a 27% reduction in progression of the size of the geographic atrophy compared to the sham at 1 year. So that's really, really encouraging data, and it's a big, proper, well-conducted study, and they're about to start their second pivotal phase 3 trial called GATHER 2 is due to start. And in that, I gather that they'll start off with monthly injections, but they might try and make them less regular going forward. But very, you know, very exciting results. So that's very good news, really. There's been also further interest in the complement pathway. There's a drug called APL2, which has already got phase 2 clinical trial data. Again, a good size study with 246 patients in the study. And that gave similar sort of hope that it seemed to slow the rate of the growth of the geographic atrophy lesions by about 29% compared to the sham. And the phase 3 studies, Derby and Oaks, are just starting off now. So we await those results with great interest. There's also been gene therapy for dry AMD. So we've actually been involved with the study as well, that's been coordinated by Professor Robert McLaren and his team in Oxford. But the principle of this study is to try to locally modulate the activity of complement in the eye by modifying the genes underneath the retina. And so this is injected subretinally, and the study is ongoing. But it's an early phase one study with small numbers in it. But, you know, this may be the way things go in the future as we understand more about the genetic basis of macular degeneration. There's also studies looking at other kind of anti-inflammatory treatments. So we've been involved with a study looking at minocycline. Now, minocycline has an anti-inflammatory effect in the retina. It's in the tetracycline family of tablets, so it's an oral preparation. This particular study is being led by the National Eye Institute in the USA, but we've been involved in our unit as helping to recruit. And the principle of the study was to observe people for a few months to see what their natural rate of progression was, followed by a treatment phase with the minocycline to see if it altered the rate of progression. And similarly, there's another study underway looking at oral doxycycline. That is the similar concept. That's also a tetracycline, and that's in phase 3 trials. And interestingly, people are also investigating oral metformin. Metformin is actually a very well frequently used tablet that people can take for diabetes, but it seems to have some potential for protective effect against macular degeneration. So that's being investigated as well. And then there's another drug called Luminate. That's the easiest name to use. And this is a small synthetic peptide designed to regulate integrin function. And integrins effectively are, again, in the inflammatory pathway. And the idea of this drug, that it's blocking oxidative stress to the retinal pigment epithelial cells, and hopefully through that, aiming to protect the photoreceptors again and the RPE against degeneration and inflammation. Importantly and differently than the other studies, this isn't being used in people who've already got some geographic atrophy. This is actually for people with the intermediate AMD, so the lots of drusen category. And in the study, and it was quite a small study, I should add, with short follow-up, but nevertheless, it looked encouraging. These were intravitreal injections, and they treated 25 eyes and had 14 separate patients who were given pretend injections. And they showed a higher proportion of people who were given the treatment gained vision compared to the sham group. It's a very small study. I don't think we can get too excited, but larger trials are planned. But it, you know, potentially, if it really is borne out, that could be very, very good, because that's catching people at a much earlier stage than the trials where people have already got some atrophic changes. And then there are other concepts under clinical research. So can you reduce toxic byproducts? So e.g. anti-amyloid treatment. There's a drug that's a mitochondrial protective compound that's being researched. And people have also looked at what we call modulating the visual cycle, which is the way the photoreceptors behave in light and dark things. And it might reduce the metabolic demands on the retina. Now, previous studies, the visual cycle modulation have not shown benefit, but we still do have phase 3 studies underway for something that's modulating the visual cycle. So we'll await that with interest. That's an oral preparation as well. So the big question everybody wants to know is, well, can I be improved if I've already got reduced vision due to my macular degeneration? And I think it's fair to say that there is a great deal of interest in stem cell treatment. It's under investigation in several sites around the world. And it's certainly been shown that you can differentiate stem cells, i.e. turn them, into various cell types of the retina and the retinal pigment epithelium. So you can take stem cells and they might be either embryonic or pluripotent stem cells from your own body and turn them into relevant cells relevant to the retina. And there's a lot of work going on in the background about how best to grow those cells, but in particular, how best to transplant those cells into the eye. For instance, you could grow a sheet of retinal pigment epithelial cells on a scaffold and then introduce that as a sheet underneath the retina. And that's a particular technique that that they've been leading on at Moorfields and UCL with Professor Lyndon de Cruz and Peter Coffey's group, etc. So that's very exciting, and they've shown that they have done that in people so far. It's all very small numbers. These are called phase one studies, which are safety studies, but nevertheless the principle has been achieved that they can do that. The other alternative is injecting the cells as fluid suspension underneath the retina. So studies to date have shown that stem cells can be injected or added underneath the retina and survive, and that they don't appear to be doing anything unusual or worrying. But it has to be said that we've yet to show in big randomized, bigger studies that they're really, that the efficacy is there, i.e. that they work to make the vision better for people. And that may take many more years to prove that they can be safe and effective. So, you know, it's work in progress. I think there's lots and lots of progress, but it is a slow business because it's a complicated thing to try and do. But there's certainly lots of work in this field. I'll summarise now, really, to say I've described the features of dry AMD and the current management, and to whet your appetite, really, that this is a very active area of clinical research and there could well be promising prospects for the future. Thanks very much.